It's about 15 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of August. You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. Our guest today will include Rachel Wentz, here to give us an update on the Girls on the Run and Boys on the Run programs. We're going to learn more about this weekend's upcoming Writers Retreat. We're going to get news about the Wednesday Energy Forum with Rory Watt, CBJ manager. Danny Peterson will be here with a preview of his new film, Pels, Inc. And Graham Watts, who's an author and first folio expert, will also be here. In addition to Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, this is a Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned for all those interesting guests coming up after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal representatives are praising a decision by the state of Alaska to drop a lawsuit over tribes putting land into trust. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Trust lands are scarce in Alaska due to a 1970s Department of Interior opinion that said trust status conflicts with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. In 2006, four tribes and one individual sued to force the Interior Department to accept trust land applications. When the state of Alaska intervened in the case opposing tribes, many Alaska Native leaders saw it as a delaying tactic and as an example of harassment by lawsuit. For one thing, the suit was over regulations that had been replaced, making it likely the U.S. Supreme Court would not have heard the appeal and would have left standing the D.C. District Court ruling in favor of the tribes. Native leaders say the case was another in a series of costly, time-consuming, and unsuccessful lawsuits against tribes the state had launched over the years. While campaigning for office, Governor Bill Walker pledged to change that approach. Native American Rights Fund attorney Heather Kendall Miller says by dropping this latest appeal, the governor is changing the state's direction.
All prior administrations, going back decades, have opposed tribal sovereignty and Indian country specifically in Alaska. The fact that this governor is now open to sit down and talk about Indian country in Alaska and greater tribal authority to govern their own communities is a big, big deal.
The state is going to meet with stakeholders to talk about the scope of federal, state, and tribal powers in trust lands. The Department of Interior can begin considering applications to take Alaska lands into trust on August 22nd. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
People gathered in downtown Flagstaff, Arizona over the weekend to protest what they say is extreme police violence against minority populations, including Native Americans. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, they called for the firing of a police officer in the nearby town of Winslow who shot and killed a Navajo woman.
The protesters marched through the streets holding signs and blocking traffic. They demanded Officer Austin Shipley be removed from the Winslow Police Department after he shot L'Oreal Synogeny five times on a shoplifting call as she approached him with a pair of scissors. The protesters were escorted by the Flagstaff Police Department without incident. Klee Benali is one of the organizers of the demonstration.
We are here to call for justice. We're here to stand as a community. It's a very extreme exception that any of those officers who have killed black and brown people have faced any charges or been convicted. And so, you know, if there's an exception, that would be great, but the whole system is guilty.
An outside investigation recently cleared Shipley of any criminal wrongdoing. The U.S. Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, however, is conducting a review of the investigation. According to a database compiled by the British newspaper The Guardian, 13 Native Americans have been killed by police in the U.S. this year. Nearly half were in Arizona. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Dakota Access LLC says it will press charges against protesters at the company's construction site in North Dakota near the Standing Rock Reservation. In a statement to National Native News, developers say they're taking necessary steps to protect workers. The protest of a few hundred is growing daily as people from tribes in the region and across the country travel in to show their support. Protesters are not backing down, saying they stand with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in opposition of the Dakota Access Pipeline Project, calling it a threat to water. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the 3rd Annual Southwest Native American Veterans Association September 22nd through the 24th. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 16th of August. This is a Juneau Afternoon, and Rachel Wentz is with me now to speak about Girls on the Run, Boys Run, and opportunities for young people of both genders to run. So welcome to a Juneau Afternoon, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
And so I'm more familiar, I think, with Girls on the Run. I knew that it was going to be branching out into Boys Run, but that has apparently happened. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, definitely. We've had Girls on the Run here in Juneau since 2008. And it's just been such an amazing program to have, and people who are involved are really excited about it. And they started asking, well, okay, so we have this program for girls. What do we have for boys? And we said, well, we don't have anything. And we needed to fix that. So we started looking around for similar programs for boys and didn't really find anything that was as good as Girls on the Run. So AWARE got together with SAFE, the Domestic Violence Agency in Sitka, and created this curriculum, Boys Run Itu'uklatsin, from scratch. So it's very similar to Girls on the Run in that it has three parts to this curriculum. And the first part is all about kids learning about themselves. So they get to kind of identify their values and learn about emotions. And then the second part is about working as a team, getting along with other people, resisting peer pressure, standing up to bullies. And then the third part is about the community. And they actually do a small community service project at that part. And then they both end with a celebratory 5K that is just super fun and exciting and celebrates the kids' work over the 10-week program.
And what ages of youth is this geared toward?
This is for 3rd through 5th graders.
So younger runners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Girls Run also has a program for 6th through 8th graders as well called Heart and Soul. Mm-hmm. But this fall season, we have the program open for 3rd through 5th graders.
And what is the timing on this? The runs are coming up at the end of the month, and there's some other associated activities going on.
Yeah, so the teams meet twice a week for 10 weeks after school, and they start up in about mid-September, and then the 5K is on December 3rd. So throughout this 10 weeks, they're practicing and they're learning things and growing and working up to this big goal of running a 5K.
And the girls and boys runs are on different days.
They're on the same day.
They're on the same
different
day.
Different time.
Different times, okay. And that'll be on the 3rd of December. And mm-hmm. Where in town does that take place?
At Diamond Park Fieldhouse.
So they're doing laps.
Yep.
Okay.
So we do 27 laps around the track, and we make it really fun.
Well, that's probably, especially with the third graders, that's a little easier than just, like, sending them out North Douglas Highway and hoping they make it back in the middle of December.
We don't want our kiddos to freeze.
That's right. I remember my first cross-country race was in September at Birch Hill in Fairbanks, and it was frozen mud, and it's amazing I finished the season. So I think I was also in high school, so I think it's good that you're starting with younger students, a little more controlled of an environment. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of good skills being taught here, both for the young men and the young women. The boys program sounds like it's somewhat analogous to the coaching boys into men program that is done at the high schools as part of the Choose Respect campaign. The same idea being, you know, inculcate values of self-respect and respect for others and young people when they're young. Do it with the physical activity associated, so it's not all lessons, but it's a good time as well, and the lessons are likelier to stick.
Definitely, yeah, we make learning fun.
Now, you mentioned something about, because this program does require resources to run, and so something about a fundraising opportunity.
Yeah, we have a fundraiser coming up for Girls on the Run. It's on Saturday, August 27th, and we'll have a bunch of vendors meeting at Thunder Mountain High School from 1 to 4 p.m., and we're going to have Unique, Tastefully Simple, Princess House, Perfectly Posh Nails, LuLaRoe, Jamberry Nails, Cincy, doTERRA, 31, Stella and Dot, and Peterson's Pretzels. And they're all coming together so you can shop for a cause.
And so a lot of those are individual retailers, people who do sort of the individual marketing of Princess House or The Scents and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have clothes there. We'll have some nail stuff, some lotions, some bags. Yeah, we'll have a great kind of assortment of things where people can come check it out and support Girls in the Run in that way.
And you mentioned that this expansion to the Boys Run program was done in conjunction with the Women's Shelter Safe in Sitka. Mm-hmm. Is there a run that takes place in Sitka as well?
There is as well. They have their season in the spring, but we have them both springs and fall and the spring as well.
Excellent. And so Girls on the Run, Boys Run, is there a place online where people can go and learn more about this, get these dates on their calendars, talk to their young people if they're interested, and then maybe even sign them up?
Yeah, definitely. For Girls on the Run, you can go to gotrgreateralaska.org and read much more about it and sign up to sign up your kiddos or sign up yourself. We're actually looking for coaches as well. We have volunteer coaches who come and facilitate the lessons one or two times a week for 10 weeks. And a lot of people are kind of nervous. They hear coach and they hear running and they think, well, that's not exactly what I do or I don't know how to. But really, this program is so straightforward and laid out that really anyone can do it. You don't need to be a runner. The curriculum is very easy to follow. We've got all the activities there. We've got all the materials for coaches. We've got a one-day training coming up that'll teach coaches how to facilitate the lessons, how to manage a group of kids. That's on August 27th for Boys Run and on August 28th for Girls on the Run. And if listeners are interested, we'd love to have some volunteers come out and help put on this amazing program.
And I imagine at least some of the time, parents or other relatives or friends of the young people who are participating are also acting as coaches and mentors.
Yeah, all are welcome to come. And if you're a positive mentor and positive role model for kids, we'd love to have you.
And they'll probably even give you a whistle, so you can whistle at the youngsters. And, you know, if that appeals to your controlling side, that's always a plus, right? You have to graduate to the bullhorn, though. You actually have to earn the right to get the bullhorn. Well, so Rachel Wendt, thank you very much for sharing this information about Girls on the Run, Boys Run. This is an activity that's going to be coming up and going through the fall, culminating in a run on the 3rd of December, but lots of smaller activities leading up to that, including this fundraising opportunity on Saturday the 27th at Thunder Mountain High School.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much again for coming on the show. Any other final words you'd like to share with our listeners today?
We're excited to have a great season.
All right. Thanks again, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of August, 2016. It's the birthday of Catherine Coburn, born London, 1679. She was the daughter of a sea captain who died of the plague when she was 4. Family struggled to get by. She was precocious, taught herself to read and write at an early age, came out with her first novel at the age of 14, entitled Adventures of a Young Lady, published anonymously, wrote her first play when she was just 16, wrote her first philosophical essay, The Defense of Mr. Locke's Essay of Human Understanding, and John Locke was so impressed that he sent her money. It's the birthday of William Maxwell, the novelist, the editor, born Lincoln, Illinois, 1908, wrote about small-town, middle-American life in the early 20th century, editor at the New Yorker magazine, where he edited John Cheever, J.D. Salinger, Vladimir Nabokov, and John Updike. It's the anniversary of the great geomagnetic storm of 1989, which particularly affected computers across Canada and which shut down the stock market in Toronto when the primary and backup computer systems at the stock exchange failed one right after the other. A geomagnetic storm caused by an increase in solar flares, which in turn produced a CME, a coronal mass ejection, high levels of solar radiation toward the Earth, which affected microchips and caused computer problems across North America. A similar storm the previous March had taken out the Hydro-Quebec power grid. Now that scientists are aware of the effects of geomagnetic storms, they monitor solar activity and keep an eye out for these events, which usually take about a day and a half to reach our atmosphere, a lead time that allows them to take power grids and satellites offline, protect them from permanent damage. It's the birthday of Charles Bukowski, born Andernach, Germany, 1920. His father, an American soldier, his mother was German. They moved to Los Angeles. The boy grew up there, scrawny kid, frequently attacked by bullies. Published his first book of poetry, 1959, entitled Flower, Fist, and Bestial Whale. Charles Bukowski, who said, "Bad luck for the young poet would be a rich father, an early marriage, an early success, or the ability to do anything well." It was on this day, 1896, gold was discovered in the Yukon Territory in Canada, and the Klondike Gold Rush was on. 3 miners found the gold in Rabbit Creek near Dawson. Word spread among the locals. People came in to stake claims. But it took a long time for the news to reach Seattle and San Francisco. It took almost a year. But when it did, 100,000 people set off for the Yukon to try to make their fortunes. A few thousand of them struck it rich, and the rest got nothing. Famous photographs of long lines of prospectors and their pack animals trekking over the snowy mountains, all of them heavy laden because Canada required anyone coming in to bring a year's supply of provisions. Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski about competition. The higher you climb, the greater the pressure. Those who manage to endure learn that the distance between the top and the bottom is obscenely great, and those who succeed know the secret. There isn't one. A poem by Charles Bukowski about competition, from Sifting Through the Madness for the Word, the Line, the Way, published by Echo and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years, and by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 20 minutes, almost 21 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. And next we have Connor Lindrum from Woosh Kanadei.
Yeah.
The Juno Poetry Slam, folks. And he's got here, he's here to talk about an upcoming event that's going to be happening in just a few days that has just a few spaces left. So you are listening to the right show at the right time if you're a writer and you're ready to go retreat and learn more about your inner writing self. So welcome to the show, Connor.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Ben. It's always a pleasure being on Juno Afternoon.
And so tell us about the Writer's Retreat.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a great retreat. This is our second one, I think, that we've done. I went to the inaugural one, and it was a fantastic event. This was before I was on the board. It was before I was really part of the organization, and I just went as a writer who wanted to practice his craft and be around other writers. And the best thing about Woosh is that it is a community, and it focuses on fostering that community. Like, that is what it is, and this is a perfect example of that. It's just a great microcosm where you can pay $45, go to our Facebook page, sign up, and fill out an application. We've got 4 spots left, so not a lot of room left. Go, sign up, say how you're going to pay, and then North Douglas, 21st to the 22nd, we have a house rented, and Christy Nami Erickson, our president, and myself are going to be doing guided writing exercises. There will also be times for seclusion because this is a retreat, and writing is really a solo exercise, although there are fun things you can do, like with other people, to help foster it. It is a very personal activity.
Absolutely.
And so there's going to be time for that as well, and it's there to not only help you address like questions that you have about writing, not only to help you enhance perhaps your performative side if you're looking to be more into spoken word, but also for you to help click into the community more if it's something that you've been interested in. If you've like seen our events from afar and maybe been too intimidated to like break into the group, this is a great way to meet some people. Some people who are on the board, some people who aren't and are just like, you know, avid members of the community, and also to get to know your craft a little bit better.
That sounds really exciting. Now, I think I may be responsible for you just saying that the dates were the 21st and 22nd, because I said that before we went on the air.
You did, and it's the 20th and the 21st.
It's this Saturday and Sunday, so you don't have to take a day off from work unless you work on Saturday or Sunday.
Right, like me.
But it's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the 20th and 21st, and registration is available through a Google app at the Poetry Slam webpage.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to Juno Poetry Slam, like if you search that on Facebook, Woosh Kanadei will come up, and then there we have it as an event, and you can find it, and in the event you can click on the link and you can sign up online, and then we will be taking that link and that event down once it is full, which are only 4 spots left. And thank you for correcting me. Yes, it's Saturday and Sunday. I really appreciate that.
Well, I took ownership for having planted the seeds of the inaccurate information.
I'm just grateful to you, because I feel horrible. People are like, oh, I'm ready, it's, you know, I can plan, I can go, it's on the things. I'm like, oh no,
I missed the whole first day. So what would a participant have to do other than go to the sign-up sheet and pay the $45. Do they have to have any sort of writing sample they're bringing with them?
No.
Do they have to have their great American novel they're working on?
They don't. You can have no current projects you're working on, and you can also be any sort of style of writing. Like, because I personally am a prose writer, even though we're a spoken word like society, and like we focus on that. Like, we encourage and are focused on lots, or not focused on, but really foster a lot of different kinds of artistic expression. This is a writer's retreat, though, so come being willing and prepared to write. This is like for writers, but you could be a spoken word artist. You can be a, you know, nonfiction essayist. You could be a creative nonfiction. You could be doing short stories, like whatever it is. Like, this is still going to help you tap into and practice skills that will help you.
Limericks?
If you must.
Okay, limericks are welcome, not necessarily encouraged, but not discouraged.
No, never discouraged.
Okay, so if you know any old men from Nantucket, then this is a call out to all of you out there in the writing community. You are welcome to consider coming to this writer's workshop. So again, it's this weekend, the 21st and 22nd of August. Only 4 spots left, no previous experience necessary, and this is the second year that this has been done?
Exactly, yeah. There's an application. That sounds kind of misleading. It's not an application as in, like, we won't turn anyone away. Like, it's not like you're applying for, like, a job. Like, you're applying as in, like, you have to fill out a form, just to, like, say that you're coming, and it's just to, like, get on the list. And then once the list is full, we will remove the link, and it won't be something that you can get access to anymore. It's not something you have to, like, prove that you should come. If you want to come, and you have $45, then you can. That is it.
There's no reference checks.
Nope.
Nothing like that.
Nope.
Well, good. This sounds like a great opportunity, and a little more time will pass between now and when that link is taken down. But for all we know, some listeners furiously filling out the application right now.
At this very moment.
And the space is dwindling from 4 to 3, and it will go from 3 to 2 and 2 to 1 and 1 to 0. So do not delay if this is something that interests you. And to learn more about Woosh Kinadei or the Juno Poetry Slam in general, where do people go?
Facebook is a good place for it. We also have a mailing list that if you message us on Facebook or if you come down to Kindred Post, you can get signed up for. And we do always have a schedule set up on Facebook for where our next events will be. We do one every month, and our next one will be in September. And I don't have the details for that one in front of me, but it's always the third Friday of whatever month it is, except for certain events, like especially certain special events.
Well, that is so far off. Quite confident we will find another time for you to come back on Juno Afternoon and talk about whatever the September event is going to be.
I would love that.
Very good. Connor Lindrum, thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. And listeners, if you're interested, don't delay. Sign up for the Writer's Workshop before those 4 spaces are gone.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Pra dizer que você fica mais bonita desse jeito ou daquele, quem sou eu? Quem sou eu? Pra falar mal do seu gosto, da pintura no seu rosto, quem sou eu? Não sou ninguém. Cada um trata de si. Seus olhos parecem dizer: muito bem, eu prefiro não falar para não contrariar você. Fico no meu samba, se quiser pode ficar. Vou lá na portela, mesmo que você não vá. Não darei ouvido se você me provocar, mas aceito um beijo se você quiser me dar, se você quiser me
was Aguas de Marco, Rosa Passos from a National Geographic disc called Destination Brazil. On a Juno afternoon, it's almost 30 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of August. Our next guest is Danny Peterson, who's going to talk about his new film, Pels, Inc. Welcome to a Juno afternoon, Danny.
Hi, Ben. Nice to be here.
I'm glad that you are here, too. And wow, Pels, Inc. It sounds like it might be related to Pelmeni.
It is related to Palmini. It is a parody of the show Drugs, Inc., which is a documentary show about the war on drugs, and it imagines a world where Palmini has become a Schedule I drug because everyone's crazy about it. It's so addictive that the government is shutting any sales down, and now there's like a black market trade, and I just made it with all my friends.
And when did you hatch the idea to make Pels, Inc.?
Well, I kind of slowly formulated the idea over the years of doing a sequel movie to a movie I made 10 years ago, which was a parody of Super Size Me, where I pretended to eat Palmini for 30 days. And it really came to fruition as to what I was going to parody next when a friend of mine showed me the TV show Drugs, Inc. And we watched it, and I said, and I was thinking about Palmini, you know, the Palmini movie of how am I going to justify making another one. And when I saw this, I thought, this is the perfect thing to parody, because there's some elements of it being like an addictive substance in the very first movie, too. So it's just kind of like taking that premise to a very logical extreme.
Well, and food, of course, can be addictive.
It can be.
You know, not to make light of it. For some people, it is literally an addiction. Certainly for late-night Junoites, Palmini can be an addiction.
Oh, definitely, definitely. it's alluring, that's for sure.
And so you hatched the idea. You realized this was the perfect opportunity to make a second Palmini-related parody film. And then how did you go about casting it and actually filming this project?
Well, I pretty much just filmed on weekends and weekdays whenever I had free time. And as far as the cast goes, I pretty much just like asked all my friends who were in the first one, who were all my friends from high school, if they wanted to be in it again. And thankfully, they were all really enthusiastic. And I had been dabbling in the improv community here in town, which is a strong interest of mine as well. And so a couple of the supporting roles in the movie are a couple of improvisers here in town, which was really great. And then, yeah, I just filmed it whenever I had time.
And how long did that take?
I filmed basically for a year. Well, basically I've been filming since early July of 2015.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you got your film. Now, did you do this on a phone, on a small digital camera?
I did it on a small digital camera. It was called a Canon Vixia, which is a pretty good camera. It's a very low, well, it's not low end, but it's a consumer and, you know, it was only like $200 or something. But it's pretty high quality for just being a handycam.
And was there a lot of post-production that you needed to do or were able to do?
Yeah, these past couple months, 3-4 months, I've just been editing like crazy, and I'm finally at to the point where it's pretty much complete. I have to do some little bit of fine-tuning between now and the screening, but it's pretty much done, credits and everything. But yeah, I edited it all myself and just paid for it all myself out of pocket, and it looks very homemade. But it's very, I think it'll charm the pants out of whoever wants to watch it.
Well, so speaking about opportunities to watching it, when will the grand opening screening be?
The grand opening screening is going to be Friday, August 19th, this Friday at 9 p.m. That's a great night to go because there's going to be some other local films being aired that same night. And it's also going to be aired Saturday, August 20th. That's a great night, too, because it's the heart of the weekend. And there's also going to be a cast and crew Q&A at the end of that screening. And what's more, we'll also have Palmini samples. We are going to be giving out the first 30 or so people will be able to get a coupon for a Palmini sample that they can then go to the Palmini restaurant and redeem. I talked to the guys at the restaurant. They were really happy about the whole project and luckily got some cross-promotion going on there.
And, of course, and that just by virtue of showing up early, they're going to get this coupon so they can actually have Palmini at a break, at an interval, during the screening of the film.
That's right, for the cost of the ticket price, which is $7.
So it's a pretty smoking hot deal, and a delicious one at that. It's almost better than scratch and sniff.
I would say so. You get the full force, taste, and smell everything, not just sniff.
And so that's going to be this Friday and Saturday, the 19th and 20th. And then what is the future distribution plan for the film?
The future distribution plan, yet to be determined, but I will make announcements on that on the Facebook invitation event. So anyone who's interested in the current event should go and find that on Facebook. Just type in Pels Inc. on Facebook. You'll be able to find it. And you'll also be able to find how people can get a hold of it in case they are going to miss it. I'll post the links or however people can watch it after the fact.
All right. So Pels Inc. is the name of the film, and the screening is coming up this weekend. So you must be thinking, Danny, about what your third cinematic project is going to be.
I am thinking about that. I'm thinking about what the third Palmini movie will be.
How
and
about Pelkimon Go?
Pelkimon Go. That's a great idea.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I love it. I wanted to add one thing, too, is this movie's just meant as a gift to all my friends because they were so encouraging, and it was just a big gift for me and my friends to have a good time. And so once I break even on the ticket sales from the very small budget, less than $500, anything that I make above breaking even, the proceeds are going to go straight to the Nickelodeon Theater so that they can continue to stay open and have cool screenings like this.
And, of course, the Gold Town has its own membership program now. So if you haven't discovered that, Colette was on a few weeks ago talking about that. And it's possible to become a member of Gold Town, supporting a worthy artistic institution here in Alaska's capital city, and also receiving significant discounts on things like movie passes and popcorn and cinema rentals, depending on the level of membership. Just a little plug for Colette's new program as well.
I totally am on board with that. Anyone who wants to do that should definitely sign up for that because that's a great, great idea.
Excellent. All right. Well, Danny Peterson, thank you so much for making Pels Inc., for coming on a Juno afternoon to talk about it. And once again, when is it going to be aired?
It's going to be Friday, August 19th at 9 p.m. and Saturday, August 20th at 9 p.m.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Danny Peterson.
Thank you.
And it's 40 minutes after the hour, more or less. This is a Juno afternoon on Tuesday, the 16th of August. I'm Ben Brown, and Tim Felstad and Rory Water here to talk about energy, specifically an energy forum related to the AELNP Power System and Industrial Boulevard Standby Generator Project, which has been in the news somewhat of late. Gentlemen, welcome to a Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
And so what can you share with our listeners about this project and their opportunities to learn more about it and perhaps even provide comments?
Well, I'm the one who came up with the bad title of the meeting. I think Tim's got a better one.
Yeah, so we've been pitching as explaining Juneau's electricity system, so and how the project in Industrial Boulevard fits within a larger scope of providing electricity to the city.
Well, my first thought was Industrial Boulevard, Alaskan Brewing Company, they're about to start powering the entire city with beer. That's where my mind went. But then Andy Klein wasn't on the roster with you guys, so that's probably too good to be true.
That's an optimistic outcome.
Okay, so if we can't power the city with beer, what are we doing with this project?
So what we're doing is the city has an energy plan, and we have a lot of people in the community interested in energy issues. And we had some concerns from citizens about what AELNP was doing with their standby generator project. And I think there was some, honestly, some misunderstandings and some bad information out there. So I saw that we needed to get better information and better involvement. So I invited the power company to the first of a series of energy forums that we're going to host in City Hall and the Assembly Chambers. And their job is going to be explain what they're doing, why they're doing it, and why they think it makes sense. And Tim has been working on the energy plan for the city, and so we've been thinking about how to involve other people involved in energy projects and basically just get better cooperation and coordination amongst our community members.
Well, I imagine part of the response to the initial presentation about the plan to build this project and then to go to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to get permission to charge ratepayers to pay for it ultimately is, why do we want any more diesel? Diesel's bad, I think, is the sort of short, knee-jerk response that some people have, because diesel isn't a very clean energy source. But it's better than no energy when hydroelectric is cut off, I guess, would be one way to respond to that. I mean, would you prefer to have diesel power or no power in the middle of winter?
Sure. So, I mean, I don't want to speak for AELNP, but that's the understanding. You know, we're so reliant on hydro in this community that if we do get cut off, then our understanding from AELNP is that they don't have enough power to supply the valley at the moment, or they're worried that they may not if other sections of the network went down. So that's their proposal. And so understanding how that fits in within this wider provision of electricity to the communities is quite important. It's actually come up at a really good moment because we've been working on this this energy plan as part of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. So it's really quite timely that this has come to the fore in the community discussions.
And I see actually, Tim, you have a copy of the draft energy plan. It's a large document with a very wonderful Northern Light picture on the cover, it looks like.
It is. It's an attractive cover to try and get people to turn a page and read it.
But it's probably a good 60, 70 pages long.
It is, yep. So the main document's about 60, 70 pages, and it's got a lot of complex information in there. There's a lot of nuances and subtleties to do with how energy is provided to this community. And we've tried to provide the public with a good background document. And we hope the public can read that and get a really good understanding of what the implications are in choosing different energy sources as the community goes forward. Do we start investing in more hydro? Do we start looking at other energy sources? Biomass has been put forward. LNG has been in the public eye recently. So, you know, there's a lot of different options, and we, as part of JCOS and the CBJ, want to try and encourage that discussion and get the community talking about what it really wants for its future.
And so this energy forum is going to be a series of meetings, actually. And the first one is going to talk about this AELNP redundant secondary power source plan. What are some of the other topics that are going to be brought up? And a little more specifics about when the meetings are going to take place. You said they're at the Assembly Chambers.
So tomorrow night at 5:30 in the Assembly Chambers. And it's co-hosted by myself, Commission on Sustainability, and the Capital Engineers. And the idea behind the co-hosts is that we have Commission on Sustainability working on kind of the philosophical issues in the community, and the engineers can provide some technical expertise. And so we've asked the power company to come and present their case and get a grilling from the experts on all sides of the issues. We also hope to have subsequent forums, invite the Sweetheart Project in to talk about that and their associated district heat project. At some point, we'd probably like to invite Avista to talk about the gas project, if that's still out there, or if they backed away from it. The energy plan itself, I think we need to do that. And all this we want to do rolling up towards assembly adoption of the energy plan probably in December, I think, is the target.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for at the moment. There's still more work to do. There's still a lot of public comments still to be received on the document. This is really a first step in trying to find out what the community's aspirations are.
Is the draft energy plan available online if people wanted to look at it before the meeting tomorrow evening?
It is available online. You can go to juno.org/sustainability, and you'll be able to find a link to the energy plan there. There's options to send an email for comments, and that's at junoenergyplan@juno.org. And then there's also a place you can actually comment on the place you'll be able to download the document from.
But the meetings tomorrow night and subsequent ones through the late summer and through the fall, those are going to be not really formal comment opportunities. If people want to get their comments in, they should do it that formal way. And this is going to be more of a back-and-forth learning opportunity at these forum meetings.
That's correct. We just want to get good information and participation out.
All right. Well, energy is obviously integral to our lives. And one thing that you didn't mention, Rory, is some of the facility-specific energy that's been going on, like at the airport and the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. No doubt those are also part of what the Commission on Sustainability is looking at. And I know that some people are interested in trying to find ways for there to be larger areas that are served by some of those geothermal projects.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if the public is interested, I mean, we could have a forum on some of those project successes is what I'd call them. So we've got the ground source heat at the swimming pool
and the swimming pool, Bay
Elementary, and I think the Johnson Youth Center and the NOAA facility and their seawater heat. And we have a lot of really interesting things happening in Juneau, and that in and of itself is a pretty good topic.
Absolutely, yeah. And the community should be proud of those sorts of facilities.
I think that there is a sense of pride and gratitude for hydropower and the fact that we've got so many clean sources, but people still... they don't like hearing about diesel, even if it is Plan B, C, or D. And so with that, I think the more people can learn about the big picture need for energy and the way that it can be met, not just piecemeal this problem, but over the long term, that could probably bring a lot more consensus to the planning process as a community.
So, I think so. I mean, ALMP's byline is 100% hydropower 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe really the question is, do you want power that other 1% of the time? I mean, maybe that's kind of fundamentally what we're talking about.
And I didn't mean to be tongue-in-cheek when I said that at the beginning, but it's true. You know, we all kind of take it for granted. When the power goes off, no one's real happy with that.
So, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tim Felstead and Rory Watt, thank you so much for coming on a Juneau Afternoon. The forum is going to be tomorrow night at
5:30
in the Assembly Chambers. And it's the first of a series of these, and you can learn more if you go to the City and Borough of Juneau webpage, juneau.org, under the Sustainability tab.
That's correct, yeah.
All right, thanks, Tim. Thanks, Rory.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. What's the reddest bird on the continent? In the east, the velvety red scarlet tanager is a favorite. Maybe the summer tanager, though neither is seen in the open nearly as often as the respectably red northern cardinal. But in the southwest, another candidate pops out like a bright red flare on the tip of a branch, the vermilion flycatcher. Compared to shy scarlet tanagers and skulky cardinals, a vermilion flycatcher is a true showman. The male dashes out to capture butterflies and bees, then perches right at eye level on an open branch. To sing its best to females and rival males, it hovers, butterfly-like, 50 feet in the air, a fluttering beacon of crimson. The dashing vermilion flycatcher evokes sparkling names wherever it's found, from the arid southwest to South America, Mosquero cardinal, or cardinal-colored flykiller, and Bracita de Fuego, or Little Red Hot Coal of Fire. Even its scientific name, a title bestowed by sober museum experts, bows to its flash, Pyrocephalus rubinus, the ruby firehead. Join BirdNote on a cruise in the Amazon River Basin, January 2017. Birds of all colors and much, much more. I'm Mary McCann.
And it's just about 9 minutes before the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of August. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. And our guests now are Beth Weigel from Juno Public Libraries, Bruce Rogers, who's from Fairbanks Shakespeare and a visiting Juno, and he's a renowned actor, and Graham Watts, who's here all the way from London, who is a Shakespearean director and author. So I want to welcome you all to a Juno afternoon.
Thanks, Ben.
I want to especially welcome Graham because he came the farthest.
I know, he did.
I mean, Fairbanks is far, Bruce, but London's even farther. So lots of exciting things going on. Just before we went on the air, we were talking about the wonderful crowd we had last night at the Jack for the reading of As You Like It. As this, it's not a Bard-a-thon, but reading every play in the First Folio over the past 3 weeks, wrapping up, it's been pretty exciting around town.
That's right. So Theater in the Rough has been giving us a wonderful read of every play in the First Folio, which is, of course, on display at the Alaska State Library through the middle of next week. And as Graham was noting, Alaska's the only state that's reading every play in the folio, so...
Which is pretty cool, and I think we should need to make sure everyone back at the Folger Shakespeare Library and the National Endowment for the Humanities is aware of that, and I'm working on that.
Good.
They may be listening now. Well, Graham, I don't know when you got to Juno, but you were there to be able to watch the reading last night. What are your thoughts about this undertaking? Do you think we're doing a good service to the memory of the Bard?
Oh, you are, because the folio itself is very, very different to any copy of Shakespeare that people might go into the local library or have been taught at high school. And just to go along and listen to that language and hear some of the additions which were put in for the folio and some of the cuts that were put into the folio. It's a kind of privileged experience just to sit and listen to it. For once, I wasn't doing the work, you were doing the work. So it was good.
Excellent. Well, I have been wondering, you know, because these things have not been carefully rehearsed. It's been more a matter of people just kind of getting there and mm-hmm. highlighting on the fly as they mm-hmm. go. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's come together pretty well, and I think that's really a testament to the quality of the writing, obviously.
Obviously. But, of course, it's difficult, as you will know, because some of the spellings are phonetic. And that takes a little bit of getting used to, but when you suddenly realize that actually what you see on the page is how it should sound, it tells us a couple of things. It tells us Shakespeare's intentions, and it gives us a kind of unique musicality to the language. It's wonderful to hear.
And, of course, it's not even consistent within one play or even one
That's
line.
Right.
You know,
That's
I mean,
right.
the same word can be spelled three different ways on
yeah.
a page.
Yeah.
So you are going to be speaking on Thursday evening mm-hmm. out at the Valley Library. What will you be talking about?
Well, I've written a book called Shakespeare's Authentic Performance Texts. So I'm going to be concentrating on the performance aspect of Shakespeare, not the academic kind of study aspect of Shakespeare. Now, because the folio was put together by his two friends and actor colleagues, Hemmings and Condell, what they printed was Shakespeare's intentions. So looking at last night, at the play that we saw last night, that cast would have included Shakespeare himself, probably playing Adam, and Hemmings and Condell themselves, you know, probably playing the two Dukes. These were roles that were written for them. And as a labour of love, as an act of love, they then printed his plays for his memory in the First Folio. So we know that that is the closest that you can get to Shakespeare himself. Now, within the folio, you'd probably notice yourself, you know, there's lots of capital letters, different punctuation. It's not always iambic pentameter, which, again, we were taught at school, weren't we? Di-dum, di-dum, di-dum. It's dramatic language. And so I'm going to be looking at how Shakespeare himself, through the First Folio, helped his actors, because, of course, they only had 2 or 3 days to rehearse them, not unlike Theatre in the Rough, actually, less.
Indeed. And, of course, it's just so topical, then, because, of course, obviously somebody made the case for not staging, but at least reading the First Folio plays, mm-hmm. and you've written the book, and you're going to talk about the kind of deeper thought behind that. I just mm-hmm. think it's amazing, and we're so lucky to have you here. Beth, how are we so lucky to have this gentleman here?
Well, it's a funny little roundabout way, I guess. You know, Bruce Rogers, the artistic director for Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, has been coming down for the last few years, helping us mount different Bard-a-thons. The first year Bruce came down, we read the whole thing and invited the public to come and read with us. And over the last couple of years, we've done sort of selected different plays, and so it's been a really great process. And how that differs than what Theater in the Rough is doing is that, you know, it's great. I think it's really important to hear it, of course. And if you are someone who's aspiring to want to be able to understand Shakespeare a little bit better, reading it aloud is also really helpful. So we, you know, invite the public to come and take on those roles and just read it aloud. And sometimes we've had a large group come and everybody gets a part, and sometimes we've had less and we kind of read in the round and just hearing it out loud. So it's a community reading. It's a public reading in that sense. And so Bruce met up with Graham in London at one point in, mm-hmm. I think, 2001, and they became friends, and Bruce invited him to Fairbanks. And so I don't know, maybe Bruce can tell a little more of that story.
Bruce, you've been at this for a very long time.
Yeah, I think we're 24 years in, and Graham, I think, has directed nine.
That's correct, yeah, nine.
Nine of our shows, and it's a treat for us. One of the things that helps sustain Fairbanks Shakespeare is guests that come in. And, of course, with a director like Graham, we bring other guests in too, but all the actors around Fairbanks want to come and work with Graham, and it sure helps the theater a lot.
Absolutely, and I hope at some point, Graham, you'll maybe, I don't want to poach you from Fairbanks, but you know, there are opportunities here in Juneau perhaps for directing in the future as well. Well, one more quick thing, Beth, I want to make sure you get a chance to mention Folio Go.
Yeah. So as part of our programming, you know, Graham is going to talk on Thursday. We'll then host the Theater in the Rough reading out at the Valley Library after that, which is Merchant of Venice. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to do kind of a folio version of our Bardathon style reading. But for Saturday in the afternoon, we're going to do this Folio Go. So you can do it yourself or you can come do it with us on Saturday. But it's a brochure, and my friend Julie Copens helped me put this together. And it's various scenes from the folio set in places around town. So, for example, you know, we start with the first scene is from The Tempest, and we have it set right there in front of the mural down on the Alaska Steamship Dock in front of the library.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great, you know, place for that, for The Tempest to happen right on the waterfront. Then we move over to the Raven mural, and there's a scene from Macbeth in which the Raven is you know, a part of that. And then we move on to Julius Caesar at the Senate building and so on and so on, right? So it's kind of fun. And we end up, of course, at the Slam doing, again, The Tempest, a scene from The Tempest, but near the end at Nimbus. So we're going to do that on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we're going to just invite anyone who wants to come and read with us from the public. You've been hearing the professionals at Theater in the Rough do it for the last 3.5 weeks. So if you've been inspired, then come and read Hamlet with us on Sunday afternoon at the Downtown Public Library.
Excellent. And where online can people go and recap all that information?
At juno.org/library or on our Facebook page.
Excellent. Well, Graham, I want to tell you you're in for, according to the weather forecast, a fairly nice and sunny day tomorrow. So I hope you have some plans to go out and see Juneau when it's natural beauty.
I very much do, actually. I really do.
Excellent. Well, then, Graham Watts, welcome to Juneau from London. Bruce Rogers, welcome from Fairbanks. Beth, welcome from the library. Thank you all so much for being here and for being on a Juneau afternoon.
All right. Thank you.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
At 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on